Thursday the 25th of June, Gimel Tammuz, Rabbi Dr. Ephraim David Becker, tell me your question and I'll tell you who you are. A man is as mature as he expresses his needs.
Good morning. Torah Way, who has been kind enough to invite me to speak this morning, has answered an old kasha. Says Parshas Nitzavim, the Moshe Rabbeinu gathered Klal Yisrael to enter them in the bris with Hashem. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, it's not only you, ki es asher yeshna po imonu amed hayom lifnei Hashem elokeinu ve'is asher einenu po imonu hayom. He included everybody in the bris, those who were there and those who were not. So everybody asks, how can you include somebody who is not there? How can you bind somebody in a bris when he doesn't know what bris it is that you're binding him in? And the answer is, the rest of them were hooked up by phone connection. Great question. So Torah Way has answered an old kasha. How is it possible that the Eisa Sherei Nenupo is also included? Whenever we speak about emotional maturity, we always have to talk about the real, the ideal, and the process. Just make sure that we're on the same page with those terms. The real is who I am. Chazal tell us about ourselves, give us a window into ourselves, we do some introspection, we can find out a little bit about ourselves as to who we are. That's the real. The ideal, from a standpoint of the Torah, the ideal is the Midos of the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Midos of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and being Dovik in the Midos of the Ribbono Shel Olam, which means, for example, if we were to use Rachamim as an example, or anger, so the real is that I get angry 437 times a day. That's me. That's who I am. That's my Midah of anger. Kodesh Baruch Hu is the Yud Gimel Midos of Rachamim, where he's even making room for us and continues to have patience and makes room for us even after we mess up his dorm room. So that's the midah of the, so there's a real, that's who I am. There's an ideal, that's the midah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And there's a process. There's whatever it is that helps me move along. So if I can, through certain avoda and musar, or through surrounding myself with more mature people, I can get my 436 times a day down to 300 times a day. That's a tremendous accomplishment. That's a move in the direction from the real towards the ideal. And that's why from a Torah perspective, we don't ever answer the question, should I? Should I? Sometimes get in my office, people say, well, wouldn't you get upset if you came home at 7:30 at night and dinner wasn't on the table? And I say, are you looking for me to give you the good housekeeping stamp of approval? I don't give stars on a star chart. That was your third grade teacher gave stars on a star chart. I don't give stars on a star chart. There's a real, there's the ideal and the process. The real is that you get angry if you come home at 7:30 at night and dinner's not on the table. The ideal is the Midos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Where do you want to go from here? So we're always looking at a continuum. Whenever we're talking about emotional maturity, we're always looking at a continuum. We're not looking at fixed, this is mature and this is not mature. It's a direction or a vector from where I am towards more mature. That's always going to be the case regarding maturity. So, with that said, let's paint the two extremes in the emotional maturity that can be revealed through our questions. And I must preface by saying that questions and needs, from a Lashon Chachamim, these two are the same. The word is boi. As you're well familiar with the word, Tiskabel Tzlosan Uva Osan, Iboi Le, Bainan. The word boi is both a need as well as a question. The two are exactly the same. They're both an expression of something that I'm missing. Whether it's the expression of something, information that I'm missing by way of a question that I'm asking, or it's that it's cold and I need a coat, those are the same thing. That's a boi. That's a need. It's a sense, an expression of what I'm missing. Is that clear? So I'm going to use those two terms interchangeably. They're absolutely interchangeable in Lashon Chachamim. At the one end of the spectrum, call it the infant real. That means how we're born. We're born having no responsibility for our expression of our needs whatsoever. We just cry. That is the expression, that's the most we can do. The most we can do in terms of taking responsibility for the expression of our needs is cry. Who has to take full responsibility for interpreting what the need is and for addressing the need? Unfortunately, for better or for worse, a loving mommy, Bezer Hashem, a loving daddy, has to take responsibility for figuring out what it is that the child needs and how to address that need. Nobody would say to a child, just come on, don't be such a baby. You're 6 weeks old already. You know, just tell me what you need. I'm happy to help you out, but tell me what you need. Why do I have to figure it out? I often had that with my wife. The baby would start crying, and I would always get it wrong. It was just an amazing consistency. The baby wanted to play, and I was putting the baby to sleep. The baby wanted to eat, and I was starting to play. And the baby was crying, and my wife would say, oh yeah, the baby's hungry. So how did you know that it wasn't that the baby wanted to play or that the baby wanted to sleep? And she'd make up some story like, well, I fed him so and such time, and so I know that he's... But that's not it. She just had a sense of what the baby's needs were. The baby was able to express its needs in the most primitive possible way, a cry, and the adult took the full responsibility. So we call it a 0-100. 0% responsibility on the part of the one expressing the need, and 100% responsibility on the part of the one who is addressing the need. What's at the other end of the spectrum? Let's jump over all of the middle steps. At the other end of the spectrum is I not only take responsibility, I take full responsibility for the need to the point where I'm grateful for the fact that I have needs because they allow me to approach you. Anybody who's ever had a Rebbe, certainly those who have been mispalled to the Rabbona Shalom, know that without the need or without the question, I would not have anything to talk to you about. My approach, I come to you with my questions, I come to you with what I want to learn, with what I want to understand, with the needs of my life, and that creates the bond and the intimacy. The content of the question is almost secondary. I take such complete responsibility for the need, that the need itself, the expression of the need, is actually a function of intimacy. So we're going to try to stretch the band between 0% responsibility, which is dumping the whole need on somebody else, and 100% responsibility, where the need itself has become actually an opportunity. The need itself is an opportunity to approach the other in an intimacy. So let's just break that down for a couple of quick minutes. The first basic step of a question, the most basic ingredients of a question are the following. I don't know. I would like to know. Can everybody buy that? If it doesn't meet the criteria of I don't know and I want to know, it's not a question. Who left their briefcase in the middle of the living room? Is that a question? It's a fetch. It is not a state. It is not a question. Why is it not a question? Because A, I know, and B, I don't want to know. So it does not mean, how come I have to go to sleep now? My brother doesn't have to go to sleep now. How come he got a bigger piece of cake than I did? Is that a question? No, it's not a question. It is a complaint. Unfortunately, it is using the word how come or why, but it's not a question. How many times did I tell you to clean up your room before you go out to play with your friends? I think it's 83, Mother. I have to check with my sister if it's 83 or 84, but I think it's 83 times, Mother. Is that what you were looking for? Wise Alec, knock your head off. You asked me how many times you told me not to go out to play before cleaning up my room. And so I wanted to help you out. I think it's 83. It's not a question, because she knows and she doesn't want to know. So the minimum definition of a question is, I don't know and I want to know. If somebody sounds as though they are dumping the responsibility for the interaction on somebody else, when they are a child, we consider that to be completely appropriate. For the little infant, we don't expect them to do more. When that's an adult doing that, it becomes difficult for us to tolerate. We want to somehow find ourselves in a different room. A different planet would be better, but certainly a different room would be preferred. And you're going to find out that in our relationship with the Rabbanu Shel Olam, there is a parallel scheme going on. If you want to put it in these terms, how much rachamim does it take to deal with somebody who's kvetching versus dealing with somebody who takes responsibility for their need? We'll see as we go further. So, I don't know. I would like to know. What happens if it's in the middle of Shir on Chumash, and the child says, huh, is that bulb out? It was not yesterday. Why do bulbs go out? How do bulbs go out? Does it meet the criteria? I don't know. I would like to know. Generally speaking, he's not just doing it to disrupt class. Something just caught his eye, and he actually is curious. But it's completely inappropriate in terms of time, place, and person. So the next step in the maturation process is appropriateness of time, place, and person. So you have first, I don't know and I want to know. The next step above that is appropriateness to time, place, and person. And in fact, when we're raising children, we recognize that they will at first, when they first start asking questions, the first 20,000 questions that a child asks, he asks always at the wrong time. The worst possible moment to the person who is least likely to be able to know the answer or address the need. Eventually we learn, if the maturation process carries on, we learn when and to whom to address the question. So if we're talking to somebody who is an electrical engineer, we might ask him about light bulbs, not the Chumash Rebbe. That wouldn't necessarily be the place, the time, or the person for checking about why light bulbs burn out. The next step up is ownership, which is, this is my question, and you don't owe me an answer. As a survivor family, I know how many times, I don't know how many times, people have come to me and said, how could your family be believers after what they went through in Auschwitz? Sometimes, the question is more sophisticated. They are taking ownership. How could your family be believers after what they went through in Auschwitz? You hear the difference between those two? The first one is a complaint. There's no way that you could be believers after what you went through in Auschwitz. There's no way to believe in God after what you went through in Auschwitz. That's the pitch. They're not asking a question at all. The next step up is, how is it? How can somebody be a believer after what they went through in Auschwitz? And then you hear the tone that says, it's my question, but you owe me an answer. Where was God in the Holocaust? Friday night, Shabbos table, person comes to the rabbi's house and hits them with the question, where was God in the Holocaust? Appropriate time? Shabbos meal. Time, place, rabbi's house, person. Hey, rabbi knows everything, right? But there's a certain tone, and you'll sometimes find it in hosts who are hosting people who ask such questions at the Friday night table. They're still talking to them at 3 a.m. Why are we still talking about this at 3 a.m.? And the answer is, because I somehow bought into the idea that I owe you an answer. Whenever that question comes up at my table, I always say, ah, fantastic question, a good Shabbos and a good night. Talk about about it some more. Why do I do that? Because that's a way of knowing if the person is actually taking ownership of the question. Because if it really is their question, they'll still have it tomorrow, and they'll still have it in a week's time, and they'll have it even if I don't have an answer. They'll have the question, and they won't be frustrated. We have concept of questions that we don't know the answer to. The next step up is gratitude. The next step up is gratitude, and that is, if you provide me with an answer, I'll be grateful. So not only is it, I don't know and I would like to know, not only is it appropriate time, place, person, not only is it that you don't owe me an answer, but if you give me an answer, I will be grateful. Most people in the world manage, if they really work on it, to get to that point in the development of their questions. From a Torah perspective, that's not the end of the food chain. However, from a Torah perspective, that is entry level. I'm going to tell you something rather shocking. Rather shocking. And this is going to be misused rampantly. That is, Chazal say the words, Kol mi she'ein bo das osur l'rachim alav. So Loshon Chazal in two places in Shas, Kol mi she'ein bo das osur l'rachim alav. A person who doesn't have das, you're not allowed to have compassion. Everybody asks the compelling question. We're supposed to have rachamim on animals. The racham of Akolmasa, we're supposed to be similar to the Rabbonu Shalom, we're supposed to have rachamim for everything. All people not to have rachamim for. Misha ein bodas. What do you do with the poor guy? Not have rachamim? The Stipler in Birchas Peretz asked the question. I read even some Parshas Yishlach. And he says that Das refers to Hakara Satov. As in the story of Paro and Yosef, Asher lo yoda es Yosef, say Chazal, what does that refer to? Kfias Tova. Says the Stipler, if somebody does not have Hakara Satov, you're not allowed to have Rachamim. Rachamim is a Lifnim Mishur Sadin. You're still required to return his Aveda. You're still required to, the halachas that you're required to do for another person, you're required to do for every Jew, unless he's chas v'shalom, lost to the klal achicha. But you're required to do for every Jew. However, lifnim yishur hadin, to go above and beyond for somebody who does not have hakaras hatov, will lead to his sense of entitlement. So whatever favor you do for him today, if you don't do that favor again for him tomorrow, you are a ganav. Right? You're a ganav. You did it for me yesterday. So now that's already my entitlement. Because a person who doesn't have Hakara Satov feels, what's the state of somebody who doesn't have Hakara Satov, who doesn't have gratitude? A state of absolute entitlement. And it goes either way. Either I'm fully entitled or I'm not entitled and I'm grateful. That's the way the system works. So if I'm entitled, and you did me this beautiful favor today, that means tomorrow, you owe it to me. I'm entitled to it. If you don't do it to me tomorrow, I'm going to hate you. Kamayim aponim laponim. Just as hearts reflect, water reflects an image, so too the hearts reflect. He's going to hate me, I'm going to come to hate him. And the Torah says, Jews are not allowed to hate each other. And because Jews are not allowed to hate each other, also the rachim alav. You're not allowed to go lifnim mishur sadin with somebody who doesn't have a karas hatov. It is the minimum entry requirement for participation, for full participation in the story of Klal Yisrael, is having an access to, doesn't mean the highest possible level, it means access to Hakaras HaTov. A person who has written off Hakaras HaTov, who is adopted the stance of absolute entitlement, is out of that category. How did I say that it could be abused? How could this be abused? Well, because I just decided that I don't have to do any favors for anybody. Because none of them are Makir Tov. Since none of you guys are ever Makir Tov the way I think Makir Tov, So therefore, I don't have to do any favors for anybody. That is called an egosyntonic use of a chazal. That means I am using the chazal in a manner that supports what I want to do anyway. It's a very poor use of a chazal. Chazal are not supposed to be used to support what we do anyway. Chazal are supposed to be used to help us grow to what we're supposed to be, from the real towards the ideal. So if it turns out that I read the chazal and I say, yes, I have felt it all along. None of these people are having enough akaras hatov, they're off the hook. However, the Stipler writes, and I don't imagine he saw it, but I subsequently found in the Ben Ish Chai, virtually two Nevi'im being misnabe with the same language. The Stipler and the Ben Ish Chai both say the words, and anyone who's ever met such a person without akaras hatov doesn't need me to describe them. Both of them use that lashon. Anyone who's encountered somebody who's just a sponge, who absorbs all kindness and turns it into their entitlement, that there is never a sense to which they are not entitled and therefore grateful, anybody who's met such a person doesn't need me to describe it. Stunning. Both of them. That is the entry level. So all of these steps that we used until now, which is, I don't know and I want to know, which is a step up from the kvetch, to I don't know, I want to know, to appropriate time, place, person, to you don't owe me an answer, to I'll be grateful for the answer. All of those were preparatory to pre-humanity. Animals can do everything up until that point of gratitude. Animals can do it also. They can have needs. They can express their needs. They can figure out who's the right animal to express that need to, so that they'll get the need met. And they can even continue and carry on having the need, even if the need can't be met right now, without the sense of killing the one who doesn't address their need. They will wait until the need can be met. All of that can be done by animals. The one thing that defines us as human, where we enter into the maturity level that puts us into the category called human, that's the point where there's akaras hatov. That an animal cannot do. An animal cannot express in any way a gratitude for having had its needs met. And so that becomes an entry-level criteria on the continuum from the zero point straight up to and including hakaras hatov. But, of course, for Bnei Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, entry level is never where we stop. Entry level is not where we stop the story. We carry on. What's the next level above this? The next level above is, I'll be grateful even if you do not address my need. I'll be grateful because you considered my need. I'll be grateful even if you cannot address my need. That is already an elevated state of maturity. It's an elevated expression of the neshama. And from there, we go to the ultimate step, which is not only am I grateful if you address my need, not only would I be grateful if you choose and you decide not to address my need, but I am grateful for having the need, because having the need allows me to approach you. The Nachash, Chazal tell us, has his needs met without having to ask for his needs. Why is that a distancing component? Because in so doing, there is no intimacy any longer with a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Why is it that we're not allowed to ask for things in Shmona Esrei that we don't need? Because our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu hinges around the existence of need. We only get sick because a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants us to come close to him. We only need parnasa because a Kodesh Baruch Hu wants us to approach him. The relationship is such that it is the need that drives the intimacy. And it is the intimacy that drives the need. Because of the existence of a need system, that's how we're able to approach a Kodesh Baruch Hu. And we're grateful for the fact that we're able to approach him. And if you look through the brachos of Shmona Esrei, I won't go through it now, you will see that this is exactly what we are doing, the most mature possible expression of need. We are speaking about the need, We are already saying thank you. We are already saying words of praise. And wait a second, don't say words of praise. No. If you see that it works out, if the deal goes through, so come back and say thank you. Of course, that I have to do anyway. Why are you saying thank you now? Why are you blessing now? Give it a chance. The answer is, I am blessing now because I have come to recognize that the need itself is a window of opportunity to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The same thing is true if somebody were to ask his wife for a cup of tea, and he knows that he would fill that cup of tea with gratitude. And in so doing, in making that request, he enhances the intimacy, then the act of requesting in that case is actually a process of giving to the relationship. If he just wants a cup of tea because he's entitled to a cup of tea, so go make your own cup of tea. You know where the urn is. Go make your own cup of tea. Women don't hear that. But if I know that that is part of the intimacy of the relationship, then that need becomes a vehicle. I'm almost grateful for the fact that I enjoy a cup of tea. I'm grateful for the fact that I enjoy the cup of tea because now I can request that which will bring me pleasure. And so it enhances the intimacy of the relationship. So we now have a tool, a quick tool for being able to assess how I'm doing, and if you want to use it, how somebody else is doing in their emotional maturity. Just listen for about 7 seconds to the way the person is expressing their need. Now, before you walk away saying, well, that's a simple enough tool, you can check to see if it's everywhere from a kvetch all the way to the intimacy. Simple enough tool. However, the variable that I didn't yet take into account is my reaction, my response. Maybe I'm not such a compassionate person, and I'm terribly demanding of other people, and I demand that they express their needs in such humble terms. I need them to express their needs with licking my boots and bowing down before me before I'm willing to see it as being a mature request. So maybe it's on my side. There we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds the way we're ideally meant to respond. What happens when the two great people, Avraham Avinu and Moshe Rabbeinu, what happens when they ask a question? Avraham Avinu, say Chazal, is like a mashal to a traveler. He's traveling from place to place, and he sees a building on fire. Say Chazal, that he saw the magnificent, magnificent world with all of its intricacy and complexity, and he saw that Rishayim were destroying the world. That's what Chazal said, that's what it means. And he asked, where is the owner of this magnificent building? Where is the Baal Habira? Where is the owner of this magnificent building? Miyad Hititzalav HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu steps right in and says, I'll help you out. It's me. Moshe Rabbeinu, Asura na ve'ereh, es hamar'eh hagadol hazeh, madua lo yiv'ar hasneh. How am I to understand the suffering and the endurance of Klal Yisrael? Madua lo yiv'ar hasneh. The pure question that comes from the depths of one's soul, that is a desire for understanding or a need, that is not being pegged on anyone else, it's my need, and I am prepared with the depth of gratitude for those who might respond or might help me out, and even for those who would not, just for considering my request. That leads us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds with nevuah. That draws out a person. When you see your child starting to take a little more responsibility for their question, when you see them starting to express a little bit of gratitude, when they come and ask for, demand for whatever allowance or demand whatever, and they start saying thank you. And they start actually being hesitant to check to see, is it a good time to ask Father? They start to check to see, and it starts to become part of the relationship. The need starts to become part of the relationship. What do we do? How do we feel on the other end? I just want to help. I just want to help. How can I help? How does that happen? How does that beautiful system happen? Because that's the way Kodesh Baruch Hu set up the world. Kodesh Baruch Hu set up the world whereby the more ownership we take for our needs and our questions, the more we get. Anybody knows that in learning, when do you get the greatest siyata dishmaya in learning? When you ask a clean question. That's just not coming because you want to show off to the Rebbe, and it's not coming because I just want to complain that what was said was not understood. I just want to understand. And there's tremendous siyata dishmaya that comes. Chazal liken it to the sucking of a infant nursing on its mother. Interesting thing about the sucking. The more the baby sucks, the more milk there is. If the baby doesn't suck, the baby can't absorb the nutrients, but more than that, the Rebbe doesn't have what to say. How did the Rebbe get more to say? Because the child was, because the student was asking a question. How does the Rebbe have more to say? Where was that wellspring? Where did that come from? Where did it come from? How did the Rebbe have more to say when the Talmud asked the question? If he either knew it or he didn't know it. And the answer is, that's where the Siyata Dishmaya, the flow of Siyata Dishmaya comes through the humble expression of genuine questions and needs. And so if you show me a person's question, if you show me the question of the guy in the mirror, and that's really where I have to worry about it. If you show me the question of the guy in the mirror, if you show me a question, I'll be able to sense the level of maturity that the person has achieved, all the way from the zero point, which is kvetching, dumping the need on somebody else, all the way to the point where there's an intimacy which draws in response a tremendous shefa and a siyata dishmaya of being able to fulfill the needs. Yehi ratzon that our requests should be such that they come from the depths of our own being, that they express the gratitude and the intimacy that we wish with the Ribbono Shalom, and that the Ribbono Shalom will shower us with his chesed and his rachamim and his love in response to the child who asks from the sincerity of his heart.